Welcome to the Resound Worship Songwriting Podcast, episode 143. I'm Joel Payne.
I'm Chris Juby.
And I'm Kath Butler.
And this is a podcast to equip and inspire grassroots songwriters serving their local church and beyond. In this episode, we will look back on November's December songs in December for November. And we will also have a bit of discussion around a hot topic. Maybe we should do a Q&A episode one day. Lots of pods do Q&A episodes, don't they? Anyway, around a hot topic that is currently hot and topical, and we will also set a new challenge for December.
Mysterious.
Yeah. I know. Don't want to give it all away yet. No. Hey, we've got Kath Butler here in the room.
Woo!
Well, on the video call. Hi, Kath.
Hi.
For those who do not know you, can you give us like a 40-second bio?
Yep. Okay, so my name's Kath. I live in the beautiful coastal supposed city, as a small city, of Bangor in Northern Ireland. I live about 5 minutes from the sea, so I love walking on the sea. I spend most of my week working as a peripatetic clarinet, saxophone, flute and voice tutor. And I love pancakes.
Yes. You're going to fit right in.
American or French pancakes as the preference?
Crepes.
Solid. Crepes. Kath, you've been involved in 12 Song Challenge and things for about, what, 2.5 years, couple of years, something like longer? I don't know.
Less. This is only my second season.
Really?
Uh-huh.
What? You're like a fixture.
How can this be true?
I suppose December makes it 2 years with a 3-month break in between, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So I started in January 24. But I had been to the Wydale in the year before that. I came to Wydale, but it was too late on in that challenge. You wouldn't let me join at the end of that challenge. I was not allowed.
Oh. Is that right? I'll take anyone now.
And so I had to wait then for the January.
Waiting list.
I remember I first came across you, Kath, because I found either you got in touch or I found you, one or the other. But you had this brilliant songwriting training stuff online that I found to do with your Vineyard Church in. Is that right? Just tell us about that.
So when I lived in Belfast, I was part of Belfast City Vineyard. And while I was there, I had the incredible joy and honour and privilege and so much fun of being the songwriting coordinator. So I led a songwriting community of about 25 to 30 songwriters. It was amazing that we had so many people who, I mean, some people kind of dipped in and out and some people were sort of there, you know, full on.
Yeah.
And we just did lots of different initiatives at different times, trying different things. And so one of those things was we did a songwriting circle where the focus was on like providing training in different aspects of songwriting. And so most of the time we did song circles, it would be like you bring a different song every week, a new song every time that we met. But for this training one, people brought the same song every time, but each time we met, we focused on a different aspect of that song.
Yeah.
Or of songwriting craft. And then people were able to then take their song away, having thought about that aspect of craft, and bring it back the next week, hopefully, having been able to hone it and refine it and put into practice what we've done. And so to support that, I wrote a pile of training notes and things that are online.
I'm really good.
Where can we find them?
Well, you can find them because I found them somewhere.
They are still up on the Belfast City Vineyard website. If you go to the menu, there's a page called Resources, and then within Resources, there's one called Song Music, maybe BCV Music, and then Songwriting, or it might be straight to Songwriting, but they're in there.
Love that.
There we go.
I love a church with a songwriting coordinator. Isn't that great? Mm. That's so good. Really good. In most places, the worship pastor is also the youth leader and the administrator, as well as the songwriting coordinator. It's very good. Chris, it's about a month since you released All Our Voices.
That is right.
Our little community songs
EP. A month
EP.
Yesterday.
Yeah. That's been good, hasn't it?
Super encouraging, actually. Yeah. Just really, really warm feedback. I've had tons more comments than normal from just people I know in the rest of my life saying, wow, we listened to that one. We used it in our small group or that's really special. That's got something. So it's just been so lovely, actually, because I think we put the All Our Voices EP out with, certainly for me, I felt I wasn't sure how that was going to be received. Obviously, they're slightly weird little songs in a way. You know, they're not impressive as compositions. And we recorded them in that sort of, very live worship kind of a way. And I felt quite vulnerable because I do some of the, a decent amount of the leading on it. I felt quite vulnerable kind of putting, I think, more of myself as a worship leader and with less kind of defense in terms of clever songwriting and a clever band and things. So it's just been personally just so incredibly encouraging how warmly that's been received. And I just like everything that comes up at the moment, multiple times a week, I think, man, we are onto something with this community songs idea. The idea that we sort of maybe the church is really quite acute need right now of worship, worship music that prioritizes the people over the kind of production and the spectacle. You know, I'm hearing that feedback and I'm sort of reading that into lots of other people's conversations. So it feels incredibly timely as well as just being very heartening, the sort of anecdotal response.
Yeah. I can't remember if I said this last time, but on the fact that you ended up doing quite a lot of leading on it, especially on the videos, so you could see, I just thought you did a great job. I was so glad it was you doing it because that was... I thought, we've let Chris off the leash and he's doing his thing and doing it well. I'm so glad it wasn't me, but not because just because you do it so much better. I couldn't. That thing about being the fact we had an OPA system, and it's a slightly weird thing, isn't it? Because on the video, you see these microphones dotted around. So I can imagine it sort of, you don't necessarily get that sense, but in the room, the guitar isn't plugged into anything. The mics aren't amplified and so on. And so you had to, in order to do watching that, you can see you had to lead it in a slightly larger than life way.
Which I think is my sort of,
you are larger than life.
My primary skill, I think, is worship leading and like that, and I think, I lead in a big church and I think part of what people respond to is that like not in any conscious or deliberate way or strategic way, but I think I have quite a vivid, I'm gesturing with my hands very vividly now. And I think, that's an important part of the blend of my gifting. And I wouldn't really put myself forward as a singer or as a musician, rate my songwriting chops, but, but definitely like some of these other skills that are actually quite normal in our circles are not so strong for me, whereas worship leading is the thing that that's the thing I love, and I actually really enjoy it. It did make me feel slightly vulnerable to kind of bring that to our group where that's not really been the most of what I do, but it also was really like it was so exciting that kind of ministry just kind of found its place within our community, within Resound World.
Yeah. Tell us about the article that you wrote.
Yeah. So I think, we're in such a journey, like with this community idea, like that EP is volume one of, planned, who knows how many more EPs we'll have to put out. And I think the thing that's really striking about it is that like our understanding of what it is that we're trying to do is just evolving so much from I think where we started, and so many things are coming together into the pot, and I realized because we've had the commission out for people to send in some songs, you know, for prospective songs for the project. But then Joel, you and I have listened through them and you know, loads of great songs. But what it's mainly made us think is, oh gosh, our ideas
that's not
about what we're trying to do.
That wasn't
here.
The right way to do this.
Are still really evolving. Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things that I was really keen to do is that, like, so much of it is about the story of our community and about this kind of evolution in our ideas. And so I really wanted to, I kind of felt like it was actually really important, partly to document it because it feels like a profound process journey that we're on just for us and you know, for what's going on. But also, like, the risk is when you're having so many thoughts and, you know, it's so in some ways quite a conceptual kind of journey you're going on, that actually that excludes people, because if people kind of aren't sort of on that journey, if people weren't at that retreat or weren't at Wydale, then the risk is that actually that is a barrier for other people being able to, you know, understand what's happening or make a contribution. Sure. So I was really keen for a whole host of reasons to kind of just capture some of that so that it's kind of accessible as a sort of a document within our community, and obviously, you know, as a contribution to this conversation wider as well, about, you know, what should the role of the people be in our times of worship and in our songwriting.
Yeah. It was good. And then off the back of that, we got interviewed by Kelsey Kramer McGuinness.
Yeah.
We probably should just admit we were like fanboys in
definitely
in that interview. Kelsey is a US-based writes, I'm
like
think
journalist,
more than any,
theologian.
Yeah, she's kind of, but she tends to write on stuff about the kind of mainstream contemporary worship stuff. I can't think of anybody else who is sort of prominent in at a sort of slightly popular but thoughtful level in
the
way that,
that's right.
that Kelsey does.
Yeah, because obviously there's tons of people doing research into this, but Kelsey's actually bringing it to Christianity Today, you know, to quite a wide audience. But it's really, you know, she's really got her academic chops, so it's, you know, it's substantial stuff that she's writing, you know, whenever she releases an article. And she dives into all kinds of fascinating stuff, like representation of female writers in the CCLI, you know, and just all kinds of really, really important issues. And she, anytime she releases an article, it's a talking point for those of us who are sort of thoughtful about worship writing.
Yeah. So our conversation was around community formation and actually how, about how songwriting itself can be an act of, I mean, Kath, actually you've just described how in your church, I guess that whole process of gathering to write those songs together hopefully resulted in some songs, but it must have resulted in community.
Definitely. Yeah. I was listening to, it was one of the really early Matt Redman worship podcasts recently, because I think I inadvertently had my Spotify on oldest episode first.
Right.
Whoops. but I was just listening to that while I did my ironing. He quoted Tozer talking about, saying something along the lines of, all our gains have been external. And for me, that kind of captures some of what this project kind of pushes against. Because when you involve the community, like we have been doing in these projects, it's coming from the internal of the community.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We talked about this thing and also just the value to the community of having this range of voices, and some of the voices are going to be external and are going to be super professional and experienced, and some voices are going to be internal and completely inexperienced and faltering, and all these different voices have a different part to sing or to play, and they all have a different value, but without any of them you kind of miss out on the richness,
right,
and the fullness,
buddy,
don't you, of what the community is. There was a really interesting let's not steal any thunder. Let's jump into the next bit, because at the same time as Kelsey was interviewing us, she was also writing another interesting article, and meanwhile we were having an interesting conversation with our community What are you saying, Joel? Okay, a really quick narrative. A couple of weeks ago, Chris sent me an email saying, one of our songs, When My Soul Is Weak, is kind of trending on YouTube all of a sudden. People are, and I thought, I went and had a look, and you see, well, okay, you can look in the back end and see what people have searched for. And I thought, that's interesting. Last time this happened, there was a song of mine called Sweet Sounds of Heaven, and which is a Christmas song that me and Matt wrote. And at some point, Lady Gaga and Mick Jagger and Gaga released a song with the same title. So suddenly, because of it, that's suddenly it spiked and we were getting loads of views. And now I'm rich. No, I'm not. But so we got this thing. There's this, there must be a song out there that's popular. And then not so long ago, and then I got an email at one point from somebody saying, have you got the music for When My Spirit Is Weak? Because I really want to sing it at church. Sorry, it's not actually ours. It's by World Hive. What is this? I'll have a listen. I think this is an AI song. In fact, I mean, the sounds of it is absolutely, yeah, it's definitely AI sound. Looking at the words, I would say that's probably completely AI. You can kind of recognize the style. I even did a little bit more digging. And I discovered, if you go on Spotify and look up this artist and then see what playlists it's in hundreds of playlists of just songs by this. It's in kind of bot promoted playlists. And, actually, there's another artist with a different name with exactly the same song at a slightly different BPM. Like they've literally just slowed it down. So all this stuff is happening. And I thought, blimey. This is, and then it's had millions of plays, and on YouTube, people underneath it just, I love this, praise Jesus, it's touched my soul. It's not, and I was had this. My instinct was, what the heck, and this is a con, and more, and then we got into kind of a big discussion with our community around the more about the pros and cons of AI and music. And it's interesting because this time last year we did an AI challenge.
Yeah.
And it wasn't to particularly promote it. It was just to say, hey, this thing is real. Shall we all go and have a look at it and see what happens if you try and use it? Fast forward 12 months, the top song, not this one actually, but another one, top song on the iTunes Christian chart is a complete AI production. That's a thing. What do we think about it?
Yeah. Yeah, so I think I've thought a ton about this. I did the interview with Jonas for the challenge last year. I wrote an article on my own blog. Like ChatGPT came out in November 2022, and I think I wrote an article in just a couple of weeks later, kind of reflecting on the role that I thought AI might begin to play in hymn text writing. Thought a decent bit about it. I think one really important distinction to make, and this maybe wasn't so clear in the discussion that happened on our Facebook group actually, was that I think there's a really big difference between the question about what role can AI play in like anyone's creative process, and that feels like a very open question to me with like all kinds of interesting possible answers. Whereas I think, you know, the thing that's topping the charts, which is a pure fabrication, you know, it's the song is AI, the lyrics are AI written, the melody is AI generated, the production is AI generated, the artist has a fictional, is a fictional AI artist with a fictional background, actually stealing the name of a real Christian artist, it turns out. And I just, you know, for me, like these two things are poles apart in terms of like, is there obviously a problem here? Mm. And in the case of AI music topping the Christian chart, complete fabrication. For me, it's just unambiguous that is not a good thing.
What's your instinctive reaction to it?
I think, like we said last year, AI is not going to go away, and it's really important that we grapple with it. And one of the things I think I remember people saying when we did the challenge last year was just sort of finding people talking about finding ways that it was actually helpful in the process, yeah. Versus not. And then, and yes, I agree with Chris that like using it in a process, like a human employing it, is very different to it doing the whole thing. That said, there's also a bit of me that's like, well, at the same time, like even if it is completely AI generated, if God can still use that to touch people's hearts, then that's great. It reminds me a bit of like when I was at uni, there was a thing about the misuse of that verse in Revelation, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock," and people sort of say, "Oh, it's all taken out of context if it's used to convert people," and yet, you know, so many people, that's part of their story, of how they came to accept Jesus into their heart. Yeah. And so, you know, whether it was a misuse of it or not, it was still used. You know, God still used it for good. So it's that. And then I just have some like less specific on this particular thing and some broader kind of thoughts on AI. Because I've been reading a book. called Platforms to Pillars by Mark Sayers, who is a really kind of incisive cultural kind of commentator. He's got lots of really fascinating stuff to say. And he talks about like sophisticated technology versus spiritual power. And as like, well, AI is definitely the sophisticated technology.
Yeah.
Can it also have spiritual power? You know, like, and also I think one of my big questions about AI would be like, can it actually lead? At the moment, my understanding of AI is that it harvests lots of data, like that it, and that data is basically, a lot of it is drawn from our almost subconscious reflex kind of swipes and touches and other bits and pieces, which means that it can only really lead us in the direction our subconscious is already pointing. Mm. And that like may or may not be a good thing. given that we're human, you know, there could be some interesting. So I suppose with the songs that are out there that are purely AI generated, one of my questions would be, do people love them because they're kind of like meeting that
It sort of reflects
need?
Them.
Yes.
Almost.
Yeah. They
see
them,
they see exactly themselves in it somehow, and therefore it's that feels great. So for a while.
Yes, it's kind of like pandering, if you like, to something within us. And I don't know, there's, like you say, that's nice for a while, but sometimes we need to be led somewhere different.
Yeah. Yes.
Than the reflection of ourselves.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that AI can do that.
Yeah.
At least at the moment. I'm slightly I'm like, well, who knows?
Give it 6 months.
It feels like it could go in lots of different directions.
Yeah. I think one of the things that a couple of things, because I've tried to reflect on my own reaction to it. And one is, I think, because my heart is so much in trying to release people's voices, the voices of grassroots writers. And I do it, you know, I want to release, you know, to the extent that I'm very picky about it. I just want to release the voices. I'm always saying to people, your voice is good. Your voice is good enough because it's you and you're part of a community and it you don't need to sound like a come on, please, let's just not have more of the same flooding. And you don't need to sound like that. In fact, the church and the world would be better off if you don't in many ways, because then the fullness of our humanity will come out. And yet what happens with this AI thing is that if you can churn out song after song, again, so this one that I talked about that I looked up, you look on the list and all the songs appeared on the same day. And as you scroll down, half of them are just kind of 30-second clip. I mean, it does seem kind of cynical as this particular approach. But even if it was sort of done in, you know, someone really thinking, I want to flood the world with Christian music. The problem is you flood the world with the same thing. And then you've got this double thing, which is for anybody who said who's trying to do something different, it's already hard. It's really difficult to be heard. We find that, you know, Resound has a bit of a platform that we've built up over a couple of decades, and we find it really hard to get anyone to listen still.
Yeah.
And the more you saturate and the more you flood, just isn't such a noise, everything gets lost. So there's something about, you know, if a handful of songs from AI came out and we all thought, oh, those are really good, let's use them, I suppose that would be one thing. But 20, I think it was on Deezer, it's something like 20 or 30% of their new registrations now are complete AI things. So basically it's kind of, yeah, how do you get heard at all unless you are so powerful you can actually get in above all of that noise? And then that is a kind of self-selecting for what music we hear. But then the other side of it is let's not all sound the same, but what AI does is just more of the same. And what AI tools right now anyway offer is I can make you sound like all the other stuff. And so I don't want to say that's wrong necessarily, but it makes me sad because I'm trying so hard to encourage so many songwriters. Yeah. You don't need to do that. Your style, your voice is what the church needs, not somebody else's.
Yeah. And I think it's completely obvious to me that AI is going to be better than any of us at, in the end, even if it's not right now, even, you know, like if you...
Oh, tell us about Becky. Chris, this is really
that's
interesting.
Right. Yeah. So
have you heard of Becky?
Within the Christian music industry, no. For a long time, nothing to do with AI, they've had this kind of figure of Becky, who when the professional songwriters get together, Becky is the sort of stereotypical, archetypal Christian radio
soccer
you
mom.
Know, they've got a whole persona of Becky, yeah. You know, what she likes and what she doesn't like. And when they're writing, you know, one of the techniques they use to write the big songs, you know, to have big success and big numbers, is they ask this question: what's Becky gonna like? You know, is Becky gonna like that? That's you know, that's part
probably,
of what they
to
do.
To be fair, it's probably slightly more the executives than the we shouldn't necessarily say all the songwriters.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Like, but I don't.
In terms of a sort of a marketing model, yeah, Becky is the.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, like, yeah. I shouldn't. I shouldn't speak outside of my knowledge.
It's a character, but in a sense, but it is real.
It's a kind of figure. But I think it represents something that's really telling about what AI can do really well. And the reason why they have a kind of Becky is because they're trying to, you know, have this sort of generalized sense of, like, you know, what is the audience looking for? And then they try and, you know, they'll try and write, or, you know, they'll factor in sort of like, oh, it'd be this kind of style of music, or Becky doesn't like, you know, those kind of statements, but really likes these kind of songs and that kind of thing. And, you know, if that's been part of the human process within the music industry for a couple of decades, like, in some ways, that's exactly the thing that generative AI does. Like, the way in which generative AI works is by taking in a whole load of source material and then basically, you know, predicting what the most likely thing is, you know, and that's the output, is just regurgitating more of exactly what's been fed into it. But AI obviously has, you know, an almost endless catalogue of musical references, and it has an almost endless, you know, source of information of, you know, the swipes that you're talking about of people's preferences. So AI just is, if what you're trying to do is write a song that will be maximally popular, that will resonate with the most people, then it's pretty much guaranteed that even if it is, we aren't there yet, that AI will soon
do it better,
be just much better at doing that than you. Because even if you were an absolute expert whose job was doing this day in, day out, the AI has more resources than you do to do the same task, which actually I kind of find energizing. And one of my sort of take homes, there's a whole load of thoughts that I got about using, you know, how we might want to use AI in our own creative process. None of this is to say about that. That's for another time. But in terms of my takeaway from these fully AI generated things, is it really energizes me to write these different kind of songs that we've been talking about with the Community Songs Project, that we've been talking about forever in the 12 Song Challenge community. Because AI can't write a song for your community better than you can, like, because it doesn't have more information about your community. You know, like, in the kinds of songs, you know, the church is impoverished for these anyway by the kind of macroeconomics of the industry. Like, and AI is just another further sort of step down of that path of, you know, these quantitative things being obviously, you know, that box is ticked. So now what is the vocation of a local church songwriter like we are? Don't try and write those. There's absolutely no point in writing those. You know, you might stumble upon one, but there's just no point in aiming for that stuff.
I see that.
Don't try and write a global hit. Write something that your community needs to sing. And that's the, on, you know, like, it's always like, I encourage it as just a healthy practice anyway. But now it also comes with the warning that if you try and write the global hit, you'll be outpaced and outgunned by the technology. So it'll be absolute futile exercise anyway, probably over the next 10 years, to try and write something really mega and really catchy. So, you know, I'm exaggerating as always, but I do think it can energize us and inspire us to our vocation as local church songwriters. You know, like, yeah, don't try and compete with the fake artist with millions of plays on Spotify. You won't win that game. But what you can do is something that it isn't possible for that to do.
There's something that strikes me around direction in it. And with the AI and the kind of mega hits, that feels like trying to push in an upward direction, trying to be heard above the noise, trying to go big, trying to kind of be platformed, if you like. Whereas with the Community Songs Project and writing for the local church, that's moving in the opposite direction. That's kind of going under. Like, that's going down. It's a downward motion. It's being heard under the noise. It's being, you know, being much more on the ground. And one of the beautiful things about that is that that's the way of Jesus.
Come on.
Like, Jesus' way was the downward path.
Yeah.
You know, his was the way not of, you know, it's that Philippians 2. You know, he didn't grasp for the kind of glory that was his, but he made himself nothing, like a servant. And I think that's like that's also it's linking up for me with this book I've been reading, because the idea of instead of a platform, a pillar is like a connection between heaven and earth. You know, the pillar that connects heaven with earth. And the idea of, rather than trying to push up and reach high, like bringing heaven down, like that downward motion, that path of Jesus. There's something really beautiful about that.
Well, we won't solve it today, will we? But gosh, yeah.
Interesting times we live in, come on.
It is. I think my biggest fear right now, and it's not like an existential fear, but it's just like a fear for our people, is that they don't give up. They don't think. They don't want to do one of two things. Actually, they don't either say, "What's the point of me trying to write songs? I already can't write songs that good." Or, well, the only way I can write songs that good is if I do it the same way. And somehow to keep the joy. In this is the when we talked to Kelsey, and then she wrote her articles. One of the things she's talked about was the, you know, the awkward amateur in church.
Yeah.
And this sort of idea that, because being an amateur just brings awkwardness. It's not polished. It's not perfect. It's not. And I kind of think, come on, let's all be awkward amateurs. Let's celebrate that, because that's most people in the world at most things. So it's probably okay. God might even like it.
And also, like, this is something I'm really passionate about. In terms of, like, why bother if I can never write anything that good?
Yeah.
Like, my main answer for that is that my songs need to change me before they can change the world.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to write. I like that creative process. That's a way that God gets to disciple me.
Yeah.
It's not so that my songs can, you know, be amazing and change other people's lives. It's so that God can change my life through the writing of it and shape me through the writing of it. So yeah, that would be one of my main, like, reasons. Keep on writing, because God gets to shape and craft and make you in the writing.
Yeah. And if you just bypass it, no, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. this is good. We'll keep on talking about this, no doubt. I don't know when the next thing will be that happens. But yeah, it's really good. Thanks for the little chat. Let us 12 song challenge. 12 song challenge. Right, let me try and get this right. In November, we wrote December songs. Now in December, we're going to look back on those November, December songs. We were supposed to have about five or six of us on this pod, and then various things happened, and two of us left, and then Chris came and joined us. And between us, we wouldn't say we were the most abreast and active of things that happened in November. Is that fair to say?
That is fair. I'm a late poster and a late listener, so yeah, I've heard some, and the one I've got brewed, I'm excited about, but yes, that's true.
Yeah, I was on top of things at the beginning of the month, and then November went crazy. But I did notice at the beginning of the month a general appreciation for the writing of December songs a month ahead.
Yeah,
like with a view to being able to use them. There was a little some confusion to start with, but then people quickly kind of cottoned on.
Yeah.
And got what it was all about. So,
well, should we jump into some featured songs? So, Chris, what do you got from your team?
Yeah, I have. Honestly, Eleanor Law is one of my favourite writers. Just full stop. She is so
favourite
innovative.
People, full stop. Come on.
Well, for sure that. But yeah, her songwriting is it's relentlessly creative. Like whether it's a time signature or some lyrical hook or, you know, she is just... All, like every time I listen, I deliberately seek out her songs because I know it's going to be something that is really striking and makes me think. And I just love what she's done. It like really ties into these themes we're talking about now. She has written a song called Hope for Pill, which is where her church
where
is.
She lives.
Pill is the place her church is. And I just love that she's done this. Like, so her church does this thing where they give bags of hope, like Christmas food, to homes around the local area. And so she's kind of written like basically a marching song. It sounds like all the church kind of take these bags and then go for a walk around the community. And she's pretty much written like a call and response marching song for doing this activity. And it is just so fantastically specific, but it just is so brilliant. This is exactly what the local church writer can do that just nobody else could possibly conceivably do. And it's so easy to imagine how this will just be an absolutely community-forming classic in her own community as they sing their special song for this activity that they do. So, yeah, come on, Eleanor, you really get it.
Jesus, you're God's gift to us. Jesus, you're God's gift to us. Born to walk and live with us. Born to walk and live with us. Let these bags display your grace. Let these bags display your grace as we move around this place. As we move around this place. As we serve, may we show.
Yeah.
Come on.
Come on. So some of the... okay. Thing I like, it's just so intelligently, Eleanor has thought, right, if we're going to go out and walk out and do this stuff, then it's going to be really simple. So I'm going to write a tune that can be a cappella. I'm going to write something. It's not even confusing. Even if you get it wrong as you're singing it, you won't even really get it wrong. You know, it's that sort of tune where you'll find your way back onto it. So that just that sheer simplicity of just recognizing the context and writing something appropriate for that context. It's curious how often we start out thinking, I'm going to write for this context, but then we just bring a whole other context with us and we write a song that doesn't really belong there. And I absolutely admire that. Yeah.
Awesome. I was also, as I was listening, I was actually beginning to wonder, was it partly call and response? I'm just trying to
I think
to scan
so.
Yeah, the verses. Yeah. So in the verses, it's a repetition. So the so, you know, it's actually got several verses, but obviously then the leader just sings the lead line and everybody can follow. Yeah. And then and then there's a chorus that everybody would learn, which is just such a gift, you know, because then you don't have to have a word sheet or a, you know.
Yeah.
Marvellous. Marvellous.
That's the stuff. That All is right. the stuff.
What else have we got? Kath, tell us.
Yeah, so from Team Dundee, we are going to go for one by Andy and Elise.
Andy Clarke.
You know, what's it called? Co-writing powerhouse that they are. and so they have written Hope, Lord Light Your Hope, which is a song to be sung to accompany the lighting of the Advent candles. And they, which I just think is a brilliant concept. Concept is one of my little, the bees in my bonnet when to do with songs. Like, has it got a, you know, a really clear concept? So this is a really clear concept and one that I think feels like a bit of a gap, if you like, that they filled, which is amazing. And they've built in the flexibility, so suggest that you could either sing one verse 1 week and then add the next verses through the weeks as more candles get lit, or just do the relevant verse each week. But just really simple, really singable, but also really meaningful and really relevant. So I think it would be really wonderful for that part of the service. And I believe that Elise is planning to use it in her church as well. So that is amazing.
Lord, light your hope in a broken, weary world. Hope, Lord, light your hope in a broken, weary world. Come prepare us. Is where we are, we're waiting, Come prepare our hearts. Need is where we are, we're waiting for you.
Feel a little bit tearful.
Yeah. At the end of that. It's the Andy effect.
How does Andy do it? It's about lighting candles, which is quite often more concerned about health and safety and stopping people setting their hair on fire and other things. And yeah, it's it's beautiful, isn't it?
Oh, lovely, lovely song. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great use of repetition as well. There's very little to it. It's sort of says one thing twice, and then the same thing, another thing twice, and then it swaps the word around and does it all. But you don't feel shortchanged. It's just, I love that. I do. Well, I say this every time, and I'm so drawn to the simplicity of songs very often, because it's as soon as you try and say more, you sometimes say less, don't you? Because it's all the stuff you're leaving out, keeping it really short. It's just that lets it embrace all the stuff. Mm. Yeah. They'll go far, those two. I'm going to share from Team Eccles. I have got, hang on, here we are. Rupert Packard. Rupert, who, actually currently has Star of the Month against him. Is that because he was, that might be a bug in the system. I think we might have various Stars of the Month currently floating around. Rupert was at one point. This is Rupert with Emmanuel. Totally, total different vibe. Here we go.
On the side of Staple, our Lord and Savior wrapped in straw, lying in a manger. The sign has come to dwell with all. We need no fear is coming. He's here to break the bonds of shame, meeting us in sorrow. Spirit heals, it restores.
There we go. That's a different vibe, isn't it? So the thing I love here is Rupert is not naturally a congregational songwriter. It's not his normal place. He's more of an artist, writes his stuff, sings his stuff. But one thing I've really appreciated in this song and other ones he's written this year is his attention to... So he brings his style in, but then his attention to things like absolute consistency of meter, absolute consistency of shapes. And then little bits like you see it a couple of times there where it's repeat, and then slightly vary and then come back. You know, some of those kind of real songwriting craft things that he applies. And by doing that, he takes a style which doesn't necessarily sound like an average Sunday morning, but makes it accessible to be able to sing.
I was exactly thinking that it doesn't sound like, you know, the average congregational song, but it sounds incredibly inviting and singable. We need that.
Yeah,
great lyrics as well, like great, just rich stuff in the lyrics there.
Yeah, and I love the melodic lift into the chorus as well.
Yeah,
comes again on His Love Divine, so a really nice placement for that.
And then a little cheeky chord at the end that,
yes,
there's a little turnaround.
You get one
cheeky chord per song. You're an addict. Great stuff, Rupert. Thank you. Well, we'll follow up now with a montage of some songs from the other teams. We've got Dan Jasmer from Pontefract with Beyond December, Dave Forrey from Wensley Ale with All Creation Waits, Dave Shaw from Kendall, King Without a Crown, Emily Whittaker and Adrian Smith from Eccles and Yorkshire with Follow the Star, Jonathan Knight from Cumberland with We Light This Flame, Martin Leckerbush and Keith Clemenger from Stilton and Cumberland with Covenant, and finally Tim Dawson from Bakewell with the aptly named December Song.
Cold arrives, the year is ending, one's fire and leaves rest at my feet, the withered greens fade out of color, I know one day this will be me. There's a voice of comfort calling us to listen to a story that was told us long ago, about a man who'd come to heal us broken sinners, and they said there'd be no place he wouldn't go.
At the world and saw it was in need. We had forgotten your way and given into greed. You are the God who made us in your likeness. but the
from paneled homes and distant lands to camel prints and burning sands, eyes fixed upon the guiding star. Who is he who calls us from afar? Journeying forward, traveling.
This flame in the darkness, God with us, God with us. You are hope for the weary, God with us, God with us.
An earth that was good, released from the prospect of judgment by flood, with rhythms of harvest, of daytime and night, a covenant shaping a world of delight.
December song always reminds me of the reason that hope lives on. So I'll choose to embrace this season with grace, from a place where love comes from.
Well, all that remains for this bit is to give the star of the month, and for this month the star of the month is the Star of Bethlehem, because we haven't quite paid enough attention. So, Star of Bethlehem wins. Very inspiring. We followed it, all of us, to... Should we just move on? Our challenge for December is, I hope, one which is a little bit more low effort, if you like. I hope. And that is to write gospel songs, but not just any gospel songs. John's gospel songs. Do you see what I did there? We're going to use John's gospel, the whole of John's gospel, as our source for writing our songs in December. So we're not going to particularly tell you which bits or how. I think we've talked quite a lot, and maybe we'll pick out one or two ideas about how you use narrative, how you use teaching, how you can span the whole of the book and pick out some of the themes and so on. But here's my challenge. I would love it this month if there are no songs on the first day, because I would love us to read John's Gospel. I've checked it out. I've done this before, actually. I've just like sat in the kitchen and read it out loud on my own. Even reading it out loud, it's about 2 hours. And if you're a really fast reader, it's an hour up. So somewhere between that is how long it would take. And I would like to challenge us, and I know we're in December and it's busy and blah, 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 but what a great way to have a bit of downtime, to sit down with the whole of the gospel and just read it from start to finish, like a story, and then decide the song to write. So my thought is, now you can listen to it on audiobook as well, I guess. I always think it just takes longer, so I never do it. It's a lot of time to get through it. But you could also do that. And my challenge is just read the whole thing and then think of something. And maybe as soon as you get to the last word, think, right, what's the song I want to write? And just write the title and do that. So pray, read, write. Pray, God, speak to me through your word. Read it. Write. Then write the song. What do you think?
Yeah.
Sounds good.
I think this is my favorite gospel, so I'm very excited.
Yeah.
It's the most like philosophical and mystical gospel, isn't it? It's full of contrasting imagery, which actually is a total gift for a songwriter.
Oh, yeah,
like often, you know, for example, you know, someone's sitting and then someone else is standing in one of the bits of narrative. John often uses contrasting imagery like that, very close to one another, to kind of make a point that's not actually explicit in the text and that kind of stuff is exactly, you know, that's a beautiful method of lyric writing. So I think there's loads of fuel here.
Yeah, I was thinking about how significant the use of metaphor is mm-hmm. in John. Mm. And that could be something to have a bit of fun with. No mixing, mind. No mixing.
No mixing your metaphors, no.
And the other thing that excites me about it, yeah. and Chris, I think you might be on board with this as well, is that John's use of, he's actually quite a structured writer. And like if you look at the overview and study it, like the way that he kind of places some of the stories and the sort of significance of why he uses which story where and how those kind of like milestones, if you like, it's like there are literary kind of milestones through the gospel that are part of like a meta kind of narrative that really has significance. So I'd be super excited for some songs that are really clever, in a sort of spiritually meaty and significant way with their structure.
Yeah.
Come on.
small challenge.
Yeah. Well, my church, we've actually been preaching through John's Gospel over the last couple of months.
And, you cheat. And
I didn't even think, I just realised. But when that's happening, the meta song is really useful, isn't it? Because then you can sing it lots of weeks and you often think, oh, great, it fits because you've got this kind of broad idea of what the broad meta narrative is that's going on.
One sort of like potential pitfall I think I thought of, like one of the first places my head went with John was the I am sayings.
Yep.
And amazing metaphors, obviously, but a bit like when we did the Fruit of the Spirit challenge and there's the temptation to do the whole bowl, like there could be the temptation to try and do all of the I ams in one song. And then when we're sort of seven verses plus, you know, choruses and bridges, we're heading in the direction of, what is it? Is it, was it Tell Out My Soul that has like in the original about 15 or 16 verses? And there's some of those hymns that in their originals, they have like
over
so many,
has.
So many verses.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, I think if you're writing on the I ams, maybe not one verse per I am, otherwise we're going to unless they're very short verses.
Absolutely.
But you know,
it feels fitting to me to do our December song. I mean, it would be helpful if we got past Christmas, I suppose, but now it's Jesus, isn't it? That's the thing. It's we get to look at and think about Jesus, and we did. Was it last time we did the Jesus of Nazareth songs, didn't we? Where we were trying to, where we said, let's really focus in on Jesus' earthly life.
Yeah.
And I think it's almost slightly easier to use the Synoptic Gospels for that because they don't have the same kind of high Christology that John has. Everything John says is so laden with this Christology. Every story tells, every word he recounts that is spoken, it is somehow revealing the fullness of who Christ is. And so it's very, sure, you can still do it in John's Gospel, but I think we'll see some kind of big Jesus revealed in earthly Jesus kind of songs, hopefully.
I think another danger is that since we're doing John's Gospel through December, that we're going to gravitate towards the beginning of the Gospel and end up with loads more December songs in December, which I guess is valid, but, you know, John's Gospel is longer.
Yeah, and we'll know, won't we? We'll know who's read through it. Whether or not their song starts in the beginning was the word.
Yeah, there's also no room in the Resound canon for another in the beginning was the word.
No, that's true. Ah, great. Well, look, we're not going to... I don't think we're going to say more than that. Look, it's a book of the Bible. We're writing songs for church. There are times actually when we have, like, if you want to, you know, listen back to some of the episodes where we've dug a bit into writing songs from Bible stories or other things like that. What I will say is, as always with these things, always treat the theme as a prompt. So, you know, get to the scripture, and you might find two words in there that grab you and that you write your song about. And it might not really refer to the rest of that, of what's going on. It might even refer to the context that's there, you know, whatever. That's fine. That's good too. But it's just kind of saying, Lord, speak to us. Speak to us through the word. Let's go in there. And some of us are going to really write meaty hymns that set a whole chunk of narrative or a whole... And others of us are just going to say, oh, I love the way he talked about being the light of the world. I'm going to write about that. Or whatever it might be. That's it. That's the end of the podcast. Oh, Kath, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to have you back, absolutely.
I think we're out of time for having me back because I missed one at the very beginning. Oh. So I'm done.
What? No, we're just...
I'm done.
We'll just have you back anyway. We're just... Who votes? Let's have a vote, okay? Put your hand up if you think we should have Kath back. Yeah, well, it's at least the eyes have it. Eyes have it.
Can I stop recording now?
No, not quite, because I have to say
okay.
Bye.
That's okay.
Very important.
This makes the thing cut.
Yeah.
That I remembered as I was saying that thing that I'm like, I'm really passionate about this.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about it before, and I didn't want to just interject in a kind of, is it okay to say this on the podcast, right in the middle of doing the recording thing? But that idea of like, God shapes us.
Yeah.
And, you know, our creativity is our discipleship. Is one of the chapters that I wrote for the new UA devotional, which is out on the 2nd of December.
Great. Give it proper plug.
Absolutely plug it. Come on.
What's it
yeah,
called?
Yeah, can we give it a plug? Yeah,
we are plugging it. This is staying in. What's it called?
Right.
This is a really good plug.
Tell us the details. Where do we get hold of that?
Yeah.
Who else is featured?
Oh, brilliant. Okay, well, so some people may know that UA already have a devotional out called A Place of Beauty, mm-hmm. that came out, I think, sort of in the early part of COVID. Mm. I found it amazing, just a really, really beautiful devotional to engage with. So Dave, who heads up UA, decided that we wanted to do another one and got Peter Assad and myself to co-edit it. So Peter and I had a lot of fun doing that. Peter was a great partner to write with, and there's various sort of 12 song challenge names that you would recognize who are involved, but this devotional is called A Path of Beauty. So yes. It's an artist's devotional. It's sort of 21 days to a month. It's quite flexible devotional readings, and then there's some optional like creative and reflective practices. So you'll find contributors in there along the lines of Peter and Grace Assad, Rebecca Beast, Jimmy Orr, Elias Massa.
Whoa. I know these people.
So
I love these people.
Yeah. And it is already on like pre-release on Amazon, whatever you call it, pre-order. And it'll be out full and proper on the 2nd of December. So watch the Facebook group and all the rest of it for
Docking
links.
Yeah, very good. Brilliant. Love it. The thing I wanted to say earlier, which I forgot to, was we did a bit of a fundraising push for our charity over the past week and a half or so. And it was, you know, low key. I didn't do all the usual stunts and things, but still we had this target of trying to get to 100,000 over 5 years through committed giving, and we've gone from 77 to 92. So isn't that amazing? So
Woo!
A big thank you. Yeah. And also, I just always feel like I want to say, so I'm sorry I have to keep hammering away at you on it. And it's not you, it's me. Like, it's one of those things where 10% of people will respond the first time, 10% the second time. And I'm sorry that sometimes I have to make a bit of an issue of fundraising. And I know it's annoying, but thank you for not all unsubscribing. It really means a lot to me. And because this is coming out on the 1st of December, it's officially Christmas, if you ignore Advent. Woo! And so we can play a song from John chapter 1 in the beginning. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.